Right, it's time for the Poofcast. We've thrown the music has stopped and the musical chairs have ended with myself, Fabulous Adam Richard, the punctual Toby Sullivan.
Who else is resident in the scurrilous halfway house of drunkards?
Available with Snellings here. And we welcome back Thomas Jasper.
Hi.
Who we have decided needs an edumacation in all things
yes.
gay.
Yes, school him.
Because he's, you know.
I was too busy at my old boys Catholic school to learn anything. So this is the only education I'm getting.
So, of course, Mother Horan is here with the Poofstery.
Hello.
Oh, Mother, what are you going to school Jasper's in this week?
Tremendous. Well,
and Wes, pretty much.
That's a given. Gays and computers.
Oh, wow.
Gays and computers are practically inseparable now.
Yeah.
Basically, from, you know.
Well, I think we invented GPS.
For a very specific purpose.
The gay positioning system.
It's often, the bond between gays and computers is extraordinary.
Yeah.
And I've often pondered this. And in pondering it, I realize it's because we invented them.
Oh, my God, we did.
And when I say we, I mean Alan Turing.
I know. I completely forgot he was a total homo.
Now, Alan Turing, who is a truly extraordinary man, he died. He committed suicide in 1954. Mm. Yeah, this is one of those sad gay stories.
Oh. That's kind of, I thought it was contentious, the suicide. It's believed that it may not actually be. We'll get to that.
But basically, Alan Turing. Was a guy that basically invented the Turing machine in the late 30s, which is basically seen as the beginning of artificial intelligence and the beginning of everything to do with computers.
Well, isn't it called the Turing test? If it's a test whether a computer is a computer or a person. Yeah, and if a computer can fool a person into thinking it's a person, then it's passed the Turing test.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. So the...
That's why when you talk to those horny sluts on, often you go, well, you failed because I'm a gay man.
Yeah, that's what the Adam Richards says. But his name is in the media again because there's moves to get him officially pardoned, because he was convicted under the Indecency Act in England, the same act that convicted Oscar Wilde.
Oh. Yeah.
And that led to his suicide. And there's Stephen Hawking, amongst other people, are leading this big thing.
No,
he's so doing it to his nerds.
Oh, yeah. He's like, you know, the old dude from Grace Brothers with his sexy nurses.
You're all doing very well.
It's like, are you being served?
Are you being served? So basically, Stephen Hawking is trying to get this guy pardoned, and it's going through the British Parliament at the moment. Now, there's an online petition, we'll talk about this right at the end, that you can support the petition to get Alan Turing pardoned. Anyway, so basically he invented, when he was at university, invented practically the first computer. Mm-hmm. But then during the war, he went to a place called Bletchley Park, where it was the most secret part of British intelligence. And it was only actually became apparent in the 80s when they declassified Bletchley Park.
And then they made a fantastic movie with Derek Jacobi.
They did.
I think you have to have Derek Jacobi. Yeah. In those films.
He must always play Alan Turing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a rule.
And anyway, so Bletchley Park was where they solved what happened to the Enigma machine, which actually brought about the end of the Second World War. And Turing was one of the group of people who led the declassification and the cracking of the code. Extraordinarily important guy. But also, no one could talk about Bletchley Park. Even the existence of it was not apparent until the 80s. So he died in the 50s. So he was really... one of the guys that one of the few people that you can really point to and say, you solved World War II. But no one could say this.
It was absolutely phenomenal. It was so important. Yeah.
So anyway, after the war, he goes to Manchester University and starts working on the very first computers. One of his first computers, by the way, was called Madam.
Hello.
Girlfriend.
And he was always quite openly gay.
I believe he was a pretty fucked up individual. Like, he was very socially awkward and didn't really understand that it wasn't okay to be gay in those times.
Was he possibly... undiagnosed.
He might have been Asperger's or something Asperger's like that. Or, yeah.
We say on the spectrum.
On the spectrum.
That's the official phrase.
What's the?
He's on the autism spectrum.
Autism spectrum.
I'm on the autism spectrum. I'm over an asshole burgers.
Major mainly sounds like you're from Thunderbirds or something. I'm on the spectrum.
I'm on the spectrum.
But he was quite unabashed, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, and he would really, and this
like he wasn't Queenie, but he just didn't.
No, he just kind of went.
He loved cock.
I like guys. I've got the biggest brain in the entire world. But I like cock. Anyway, basically, when he was living in Manchester in the '50s. Picking
down
up guys, really not a good idea. So, and he was a little indiscreet and basically it led to him being
arrested.
Now, he, during the trial, which was a very dodgy trial, and also, of course, because they couldn't say you're the most really important guy, the government's freaking out because at this time there was a gay spy scandal with McLean and Burgess, which was overtaking British society at the time, which were these very posh Cambridge spies that were gay and that had basically given a lot of secrets to the Russians. So anyway, Turing really cops it.
We're and, so nasty, aren't we? We just love a good gossip. Hey, Russia, guess what?
Yes, pillow talk.
You're not going to believe what we're doing over here.
I've never got the idea of pillow talks and spies kind of going, oh, I've just had a shag. Really need to talk about work right now.
No, it's as Jasper says, it'd be that they'd be meeting up in some gay bar in Berlin and saying, you know, Winston Churchill wears flats.
Well, that was the talk, that Turing was considered a security risk because they thought, oh, he's going to be like all gays.
Yeah.
Just telling everything to everybody.
And so then it gets
so
ugly.
So indiscreet.
Then it gets ugly. So because at that time, they gave him the choice of chemical castration, which is they give you a synthetic female hormone.
Oh, my Lord.
And basically, it makes you impotent and gives you boobs, basically. Ew. And it's pretty horrible. Anyway, he was on this for a year, and he goes downhill, and eventually commits suicide. Now, surrounding the suicides, a number of really interesting things. It was very contentious. He officially committed suicide by eating an apple laced with cyanide.
What?
Now, his biographer says that Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs was his favourite film, and that he was dramatically in a gay way recreating the scene to commit suicide.
I'm going to go out like Snow White.
He lay down in the glass coffin and invited Ronnie Corbett around. It's all fucking bullshit.
It's all very strange and kind of no one quite knows what it was.
I'm hoping Prince Charming will kiss me and wake me up.
But in the end, it was all very inconclusive. And this guy basically gets buried.
I believe there's an urban myth too that, you know, that the Apple computer logo is like an apple with a bite taken out of it.
Now, Stephen Fry asked Steve Jobs before he died if that was the case. And Steve Jobs said, oh my God, I wish it was. So basically he dies, you know, he's put in the ground, and in the 80s, slowly, the declassification happens. Everyone realizes this is the most extraordinary guy.
Yeah.
And they start to campaign for him to be, you know, he was basically, you know, given this horrible, horrible
hounded to his death.
So there is now a campaign, and you can get onto it and basically give them money. But the best way you can give them money, and I'll close with this, and this is quite hilarious. Amongst one of the few things he ever fucked up was he thought he can create an algorithm to win at Monopoly. And he played a friend's kid, a friend's son, who was a really good Monopoly player. And he said, I've got the algorithm. Rushed over to his place, said, I've got it. I can do it. Got totally trounced. So, and this is probably the only thing that Alan Turing ever failed at. So, the people at Bletchley Park, which is now a big trust, are part of the people who are trying to get money for his the pardon. They put out a special Monopoly set, which is an Alan Turing Monopoly set, which you can buy online from the Bletchley Park website for £29.95, and £10 of that goes to the pardon.
Oh, cool.
And it's a very rare Monopoly set, and so you can actually buy it.
And it's like Alan Turing themed.
Yeah,
or it's
instead of all the streets of London, they've got all the beats of London.
Yeah, the blue one's Hampstead Heath.
Hyde Park Corner calls me back.
You win second prize in a grinder contest. Collect £10.
So instead, next time you use grinder,
you find drugs in an overcoat pocket. Collect £25.
So next time you use grinder, you can thank Alan Turing for this, yeah. And you really should get online and help with this pardon, because if anyone deserved an official pardon from the British government, it's probably this guy.
Absolutely, so fundamental to gay culture. If an iPad could drive me to the peel, I would never need any human contact again.
Well, we will put details for that online at talkingpoppy.com.au, which is a website on the internet which is entirely made out of computers. Thank you so much, Mother Horan.
Cheers.
Oh, if it wasn't for Alan Turing, there would be no Poofcast.
There would be no Poofcast. Curse him. Fuck you, Alan Turing. Fuck you.
A fallen down drunk Nelly Queen.
Well, that's the pot calling the kettle beige.
Talk poofy to me.
Now, Jasper, do you remember we were talking to Colin Bertrouni?
Yes.
About, he briefly mentioned the Enough campaign.
Yes.
So I thought we should speak to an ambassador.
That Ooh. Sounds good.
I thought we would speak to the ambassador to Berlin. No. An ambassador for the Enough campaign. It is one of our regulars here now at the Poofcast. Dean Beck, how are you, darling?
Oh, I feel like a piece of furniture, to be honest.
Piece of furniture with a very large hole in it.
Like one of those, you know, anaesthetic donuts for hemorrhoids.
No, you know what? You know what you are if you're a piece of furniture? You're the chair that I went through during the Talking Poofy cast party in Adelaide when I was doing Defying Gravity.
I'd like to see you defying gravity, frankly.
Well, I did briefly before I went through the chair.
Yeah, Adam confirmed gravity.
It does exist.
Yeah,
it's real
thing.
It's real and powerful.
Now, Dean, explain to us what it means to be an ambassador for the Enough campaign and what the aims are, pretty much.
Well, look, stigma around HIV has outcomes for everybody, whether you're straight or gay, whether you're HIV positive or HIV negative. And those outcomes include people not going to get tested more often, because why would you want to find out if you got HIV?
Oh, I know.
You then have to deal with the stigma attached to it. It reduces the impact of prevention messages and sexual health messages.
Because people just go, oh, well, look, it's not a thing I should be worried about.
Well, they tune out.
Yeah.
They tune out because they don't want to hear it.
Mm.
It stops public discussion, and really over the last decade, the conversation around HIV within the gay and lesbian community has almost disappeared.
Well, now it's just turned into a string of jokes, really.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah, and sorry about that.
That wasn't you. Scott's not here.
It stops people from disclosing their status and having that conversation, which has got tremendous outcomes, you know, negative outcomes.
Yeah.
And also, Dean, I imagine it's just fundamentally unfair. You don't pick shit through someone because they've got a cold.
No.
Or if they've got cancer.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I fucking hate those stupid cancer people.
Get rid of them.
Yes, they're taking up all that space. Oh, they don't take up much space at all.
So as the second ambassador for the campaign, the first, of course, was the amazing Jai Wallace, who came out as being HIV positive during the London Olympics period. And as a negative, HIV negative person, my role is to really just talk about it and inject that communication back into our community and, you know, hopefully get a few negative people to be a little less discriminatory.
Be a bit more positive.
And yes, positive about positive people.
Oh, and I guess the point you're making there too, if you know, as a HIV negative person, is that it's everyone's problem. It's not just a problem for the POS community.
Yeah.
You got it in one. It's our community and our nation's health that is suffering because of the stigma associated with the disease. So.
And I guess now that there is there's rapid testing, there's also that thing of, like, you know, you kind of go, oh, well, I don't want to go and get a test because then I don't want to have to sit around for 3 months waiting to find out and not have sex with anyone.
Rapid testing is an interesting one. I interviewed recently the head of the research program at Melbourne Sexual Health around rapid testing, and I asked him how soon Melbourne Sexual Health Clinic was going to roll it out, and he said, we have no intention of using it at this point in time.
Really?
Really?
And I said, well, why is that? And they've got a few questions around the efficacy of one of the aspects of the new test.
I.e., does it work?
But, well, no, it works for picking up antibodies.
Right.
But the new test is designed to also pick up antigens. So your body hasn't reacted to it, but it has it.
Right.
In other words, it's reducing that window. So you've got the HIV virus, but your body hasn't yet produced antibodies. And in that window, it's a little bit questionable as to its validity. So they're going to be still using the old blood test, but they've announced that they will be phoning through the results.
Oh, wow.
So you won't have to go back. Yeah,
you won't have to go back and have the uncomfortable wait.
Yeah. So
that's not a phone call you want to take, though.
Well, look, let's put it another way. If it was a result that perhaps you needed to get further testing done,
yes,
they would ask you to come in and have that further test.
Right.
Yeah, I got tested about 3 weeks ago, and they said, oh, we can't tell you what the HIV results are over the phone. You have to come in and get them, but there's no hurry. So they're quite good at that. They're obviously preparing for that contingency.
Yes. And so I think the phoning through the results is a new development in 2013.
Oh, my God.
So, Dean, in terms of discrimination, there's obviously things like, you know, I got sacked because I'm HIV positive or whatever. What else are we talking about?
It's far more insidious than that.
Yes.
And it's people online being revolting towards people who are being honest about this status. It's people, of course.
Why would I want to hook up with you? You're a bag of AIDS. Horrible talk.
And are you clean? Which has got to me to be the most repulsive.
Are you clean?
See,
you know, when somebody asked me that the first time, I thought, had I douched? Of course I douched.
Was there a bit of Lego stuff? I've got to say, I've had sex with people who are HIV positive, and they've been immaculately clean, and I've been the dirty pig. They've gone, oh, can you go and wash that? That's a little bit. And I'm like, yeah, I probably should clean that. It's been a day.
To ask that question it's far less offensive to say to someone, are you positive or negative, than it is to say, are you clean?
Because
it's just stupid. And the open-ended answer to that question is ridiculous. You can end up with anything. So,
yeah. Are you clean just means, you know, well, look, I'm tidy.
Exactly.
But it's not hospital grade.
It's not dirty. It's just messy.
I haven't douched with domestos, if that's what you're asking.
And, of course, the other thing that I'd really like to get across is that you are far more likely to contract HIV by having unprotected sex with someone who doesn't know their status than you are by having protected sex with an HIV-positive person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my experience has been anyone I've had sex with who's been HIV-positive, it's been, you know, they've gone to outrageous lengths to make sure it's incredibly safe.
Well, you would.
Yeah.
And I would suggest that my experience has been exactly the same.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the last thing they want to do is not knowingly pass it on.
Yeah, that's not something you want to be responsible for.
So what are the activities of the Enough campaign? What are you doing? You're holding a fete? pony rides? Have you got little posters in bus shelters with, like, Ricky Lee with a big thumbs up going, HIV's okay by me?
Dean attacked me with his prick the other day and stuck it right on me.
We have a number of little badges going around with various slogans on them. We'll be very visible throughout Midsummer and, of course, Pride March. I'm absolutely so excited to announce with you today that the Melbourne Chargers are the next ambassadors.
Ooh, they're hot.
The entire team.
The whole team.
Oh, God.
Yes. But it's more than that. Their parent team, which is a 100-year-old traditional rugby union team, the Melbourne Unicorns, have turned around and said...
Stop.
No, you're making that up.
I'm not.
Oh, my God. So, and the Unicorns are the straight team?
Yes, they are.
They've said,
how can we help? We're on board as well. So that's really wonderful. Yeah.
Oh, that's
really
very good.
Yeah. All power to the charges and the unicorns. And, of course, you can check out all of the details about Enough by going to enough.org.au. Check out the 10x10 manifesto, which outlines very clearly why HIV stigma is so important to eradicate. And you can sign the pledge.
Yeah, well, I mean, I worry about people finding out for the first time that they're HIV positive and just going, oh, my God. Now all the people who I've heard say hideous things about people that we know are HIV positive, that's all going to become directed at me.
Well, you know, someone came up to me knowing that I was an ambassador for the campaign and said recently, I'm HIV positive and I knew I would become HIV positive. I said, what do you mean? They said, the way I used to treat HIV positive people, I knew would come back to haunt me.
Oh, wow.
Mm. Well, he contracted it from fucking karma without a condom.
Yeah, you've got to be careful when you're having sex with karma.
Yeah.
She's a bitch.
She so is. She so is.
Talk about will you make me coffee in the morning.
Hey, who's HIV positive? Who are the role models? You talked about Jai Wallace. Who else?
Here in Australia, look, sadly, we have very, very few role models in this space.
I'm distressed even asking that question. I should know. But
look, internationally, there's people like Greg Louganis.
Oh, yeah.
Who, of course, is the Olympic diver. But there are so few role models that are publicly out about their HIV status. And that's really sad because, you know, HIV is manageable, it is treatable, and long life is very sustainable in this day and age. But I would like to see more people like Jai be out and proud in that space and to be encouraging the HIV positive community to take responsibility for their health and well-being.
You know, it's interesting too, the two people that you mentioned, Jai Wallace and Greg Louganis, are really healthy, world-class athletes.
Yeah. Like, absolutely.
They're healthier than me.
Yeah. Way healthier than I am.
Or healthier than I have ever been or will ever be again. They're healthier than anyone I fucking know. So shut up with your HIV illness stuff. As far as I can see, if you get HIV, you get an Olympic gold medal and a breakfast cereal endorsement.
Like, I'm not quite sure that's the message we're trying to get across.
Oh, okay. I've got Kieran Perkins on speed dial. I was going to...
Let's not question his sexuality.
No, he was married to a lovely woman for some time.
Let's enforce another one of
those. So is Hugh Jackman.
Yes.
Careful.
Wow.
Well, don't say Travolta.
Massage anyone?
I'm carrying a lot of tension in my anus.
Really? Because you're usually causing quite a lot. Right?
Oh, dear.
Man. I know.
It's terrible. Thank you so much, Dean Beck.
Enough.org.au was where it's at. My pleasure, and good luck to you all.
We will pop a link on the talkingpoofy.com.au page as well. Bless
you. Oh, you're a gorgeous man. Thank you.
Big air kisses.
Mwah.
Mwah.
Mwah. Mwah. Bye.
Bye.
Poofcast on review. With Lorna. And Lorna.
Hello.
Hello.
Is it working?
Is that on? Yes.
Oh, gosh.
It's very modern, isn't it?
Isn't it? I haven't done this before.
Gosh, yes. Yes, I know. Gosh, you know, talking into this big black microphone reminds me of what we watched the other night.
I think what Lorna is referring to, of course, is our first review, Gay Frat House 4.
Gay Frat House 4. And I didn't think I'd understand it because I hadn't seen the first three.
I was worried about that too.
Yes.
I was worried about that as well.
But, you know, we got by, didn't we?
We managed.
Because you made those lovely pikelets.
Yes, they were good, weren't they?
I've never had curried pikelets before.
Well,
No, they were good.
It's nice because it just, the pikelets can be...
They can be a bit bland, can't they? Yes, but I thought that...
So I just put a bit of spice and some Worcester in the bowl.
Worcester in there, right. Just put in a bag.
It was good. Because often they can leave me a bit gassy, pikelets, as well.
Oh, yes, I have that problem too. But I found the cream cheese that you put on them just, you know, suppress that a little bit. Because that blocks me up, that cream cheese. Really does.
Yes, it's a little trick I learnt in the war.
Oh, is it? Yes. Yeah, you learnt a lot in the war, didn't you?
More than I can have names for.
Oh, really? Yes. It's probably good that you're forgetting things, isn't it? Yes.
Anyway, Gate for House 4 concludes with a flip-flop highlight between Damien and Nicholas Cruz. It's a nice surprise.
It took me by surprise.
Yes. Nicholas jacks off onto his belly and Damien stands above and sprays on his chest.
Yes.
Anyway, moving on.
Here are the nominees, let me see, for the motion picture drama. What? I don't open this. I just read it from up there. I know it is. Talk poofy
to me. Hey, this is the fabulous Adam Richard. If you are having trouble following any of the ongoing storylines in the Poofcast, you can always subscribe to our old, ancient episodes. They're dusty. For instance, episode 9, which has Wes's confession about the lettuce and Will Anderson talking about who would be top or bottom out of Todd and Russell on the Gruen transfer. I know, it's weird. You can subscribe at the talkingpoofy.com.au website. All the details are up on the top right-hand corner. I think it costs like $7 a month for access to the archive for 6 months. So you can download all of them in that time. And it's also hand-cranked. So when you pay, don't expect to get access all of a sudden. So I've got to go and tick some boxes myself. Yeah, sorry about that. I'm not going to record that because if Gwen catches on, you won't want to do it every day.
From Big City, chick.
Maybe she could advertise on the Poof Cast.
Hello, it's Gwen from Big City, chick.
Hello,
the stylish store for the larger lady.
Oh, please. Wes is right here. So rude. Do you need a headphone, just spare us?
I can listen.
No, you can talk.
Oh, what are you talking about?
We're doing Poofstery.
Oh, I love Poofstery.
My favourite.
On special this week, two-man trail masters.
Talk poofy to me.